Chapter 10, Crime and Punishment, Costly and Counterproductive. Absolutely no good can come from creating millions of angry and unemployable twice-abused men. I have been detained by police on at least 4 occasions for my own bad behavior. Most of the time, the circumstances involved alcohol. Even when I had done stupid, thoughtless things, the officers seemed to want the most positive results to come out of the circumstances. In retrospect, it is so glaringly obvious how different my life is today because police officers did not make my life miserable for what were minor stupidities. At least one of my offenses would have been deserving of harsh treatment and a stiff sentence. I could easily have spent time in jail for my youthful indiscretions. In today's world, a criminal record could very well have interfered with my success in the licensed field I have earned my living at. I know an African-American man who has worked very hard to have a family and build a life like normal people. He has a much harder time than other men do, though, because he has spent time in prison. I am impressed with his intellect. I like him immensely as a person. It hurts me that he has been unable to procure a job that pays a decent wage or own a home. He knows he's a second-class citizen. He struggles daily to keep his wife from drugs and alcohol. He goes to work every single day and works all the overtime he can get. He works harder than anyone I know does. He and his wife have been trying to save enough to buy his family a home for several years. It's a real hard life. Not long ago, his wife got drunk and did something stupid, and they had a fight. He did not hit her, but she dialed 911 and he went to jail. He almost lost his job and he could have gone back to prison. It's a real hard life. If I were he, I might be a very bitter man. No one wins by punishing this man anymore. Minnesota spends 5.3 times more money per prisoner than per public school student. In 2003, the U.S. ranked 91st in staff-to-student ratio in its public school system. 90 other nations have more teachers per student than America. Juvenile arrests for murder, 2001. California, 196. Wisconsin, 134. The U.S. accounts for 1/3 of the world's total of persons sentenced to death for crimes committed while under 18. Since 1991, we have executed 17 child offenders, more than any other nation. Since 1992, nearly half the states have expanded their lists of excluded offenses, lowered the ages of eligibility for prosecution as an adult from 16 to 14 or 13, or granted prosecutors more authority to transfer cases to criminal court. This is a fundamental policy shift from rehabilitation to retribution for children. The results for children in the prison system are statistically much less positive in all respects compared to the children in the juvenile justice system. A 16-year-old who enters prison has very little hope of ever leading a normal, productive life. Only Congo, Somalia, Iran, and the United States executed juveniles as of 2004. Almost 80% of executions of persons executed for crimes committed as juveniles were American in 2003. European Union member states average 87 prisoners per 100,000 people. The United States averages 685 prisoners per 100,000 people. With only 4% of the world's population, America now has 25% of the world's prison population. Annually, America averages about 15,000 juveniles in adult prisons. About 20% of them were committed for property crimes, and 16% have been committed for drug or public order crimes. Over 20% of all violent crime victims are juveniles. 44% of African-American men living in Hennepin County, Minneapolis, Minnesota, were arrested in 2001. There were no duplicate arrests among them. In fact, 58% of these men went on to be rearrested for a second crime within 2 years. From African-American Men's Study, 2002. 48% of African-American boys dropped out of school in Minneapolis public schools in 2002. From the newspaper Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, February 12, 2004. Under President Clinton's watch, the kingpin laws, mandatory minimums, and punishment for growing small amounts of marijuana became the norm. Today, sentencing guidelines demand that growers of small amounts of marijuana serve huge sentences. It is common that small marijuana growers face sentences of 2 or 3 times longer than murderers. Over 50% of our prison population is nonviolent drug offenders. Under the 1980s Kingpin Drug Laws and the Mandatory Minimum Sentencing Act, high-paid attorneys for wealthy drug clients are able to have their client's sentence reduced by giving up those other people who are part of the drug conspiracy. The sentencing is harsh and mandatory. The judge is not allowed to take into consideration any outside circumstances that might work in favor of the defendant. Enforcement of the Kingpin Drug Laws include imprisoning many lesser-involved folks and often a girlfriend who is only guilty of being in love with or afraid of a drug dealer. Many women are losing their futures and their children to the harsh one-size-fits-all mandatory minimum sentencing that locks them up for many years. Politics of punishment have all but demolished rehabilitation and meaningful sentencing. Many federal and state judges have complained and some have resigned over the gross unfairness of harsh sentencing guidelines. The race to punish drug users was a political movement that was pushed through Congress with no public debate, and it is an example of the poorest political stewardship this nation has ever seen. 2 presidential studies over 20 years on the effects of illicit drugs recommended exactly the opposite approach. Instead, Congress determined that imprisoning anyone even remotely involved with drugs would be a better public policy than reaching out to citizens or their children. Today, thousands of at-risk youth receive the same sentence, perhaps for simply driving someone who has been a party to a drug deal as the dealer. The poorest and the least able to defend themselves receive the longest sentences in our current court system. Draconian drug laws have decimated thousands of families, and legislation is still being passed to stiffen drug crime penalties. Americans have agreed, by voting, that incarcerating vast numbers of poverty-stricken, uneducated people, mostly for nonviolent offenses, is a better alternative than anything else we can think of. Many felons will never vote again. A large percentage will never hold a decent-paying job. Unemployment or underemployment keeps people from becoming a contributing member of their own community. Remaining on the outside of one's own community creates a sense of hopelessness and failure. This sense of despair explains America's high rate of recidivism, 50 to 70%. Mandatory minimum sentencing needs to be rolled back in favor of laws that reflect the actual involvement of the defendant and seriousness of the offense. A mountain of evidence has been gathered over many years, nationally and internationally, to indicate that social programs are much more meaningful and effective than prison sentencing for nonviolent drug crimes. Is it possible that a program removing nonviolent drug offenders from behind bars and placing them in socially responsive programs designed to help build life skills and self-esteem would be less expensive, more productive, and a more ethical means of handling this problem? It would be a major shift in policy, and no doubt a dramatic and painful transition period would follow. But can anything be worse than what we've been building for the past 30 years? Today, mothers, imprisoned victims through the gross unfairness of the Kingpin Doctrine, can lose any chance of raising their children. Because of minor involvement with drug dealers and users, these women are placed in prisons far from their homes and unable to even see their children because of the long distances. Rather than provide rehabilitation and opportunities, our institutions are destroying these families. It's costly and tortuous public policy. Depression, hopelessness, the never-ending remorse, and the tedium of prison life spell the end of one more marginal person in our community. Their children are cast out into an overburdened state system that can never replace what might have been a fair and caring home life. Who decided that it is better to invest billions in prisons and so little for helping poor and uneducated women? Poor children are likely to grow up as poor adults. They will earn less and find it harder to get work when they grow up. If they have mental disorders, and over half the children in the juvenile justice system have diagnosable mental illness, they are 10 times more likely to graduate into the criminal justice system. In 1998, the children in child protection systems were 59% African American. Scare tactics don't work. Get tough tactics don't work. The trouble with boot camps, detention centers, and get tough programs is that they commingle violent children with other children who might easily be encouraged into better behaviors if they were simply shown better directions and provided some training. Sending juveniles into adult jails ensures a more violent youth with a more advanced approach to crime and asocial behavior. Sophisticated criminals teach naive juveniles in the finer arts of crime and violence. What else could happen? For the last 30 years, we would rather build prisons than libraries or playgrounds. Public support for late-night teen programs is lacking. However, we have tons of money for new detention centers and prisons. It is as if Americans do not value crime prevention, only punishment. Statistically, we can see that countries with the lowest rates of poverty and illiteracy have the lowest crime rates. American attitudes, politics, and policies have consistently concentrated on punishment and a revenge mentality against people caught up in the system. The fact that the system is disproportionately hard on poor people and people of color has been minimized. America has about 25% of the world's inmates. Recently surpassing Russia, we are now the most violent, crime-ridden, industrialized nation in the world. Of our population, over 7% are in criminal institutions, compared to less than 1% for the rest of the industrialized world, except Russia. November 8, 2004. Bureau of Justice statistics show that during 2002, 11 states increased their prison populations more than 5%. The leaders were North Dakota, 11.4%, and Minnesota, 10.3%. 84% of women in the federal prison system are incarcerated for nonviolent offenses. From the implementation of the Kingpin Laws, mandatory minimums, in the 1980s to 2002, the women's prison population grew by 800%. According to Amnesty International in 2002, 81% of all executions took place in just three countries: China, Iran, and America. Scores of prisoners suffering mental retardation or illness have been put to death. In 80% of executions since 1997, the original murder victims were white. The report lists 50 cases where African Americans were convicted by all-white juries, each on showing a pattern of black juror exclusion by government prosecutors. A quote from Amnesty International, 2002. Juvenile arrests in 2001, California, 239,000. Texas, 180,000, and Florida, 127,000. Since 1973, death sentences have been given to 140 offenders for crimes committed as juveniles. In 1999, the U.S. executed 98 juvenile felons. In studies done of death row inmates, most inmates were severely abused as children, and many of them have parents who were significantly mentally impaired. The childhood abuse suffered by these men was extremely brutal and prolonged. Quote, of 15 death row inmates, majority of subjects came from families in which parents or step-parents threatened each other with extreme violence. In six of these cases, these acts were homicidal. Unquote. From Sacchetti and Carlson's book, Child Maltreatment Theory and Research on the Causes and Consequences of Child Abuse and Neglect. Cambridge University Press. Over 7 million Americans are now in the federal penal system. 4.8 million are on parole. Washington State has almost 4% of its population on parole. Adding America's jail population, juvenile justice system population, and child protection system population to all the sons, daughters, husbands, and wives directly involved in these systems results in a big percentage of Americans that are enmeshed in government agencies. Three of every four children murdered in the 26 top industrial nations was American. From the book Ghosts from the Nursery by Robin Carr Morse, Atlantic Monthly Press. The cries for longer sentences and more prisons grow louder with each new election. Wisconsin has reintroduced the chain gang and forces its prisoners to wear stun belts. Misbehaving prisoners are electrically shocked for infractious behavior. I suspect that some guards will find it very tempting to punish those prisoners who have made it onto a guard's personal grudge list. One in every 13 African-American boys will go to prison before he is 20. One in six African-American boys will never graduate from high school. One in eight African-American girls will not graduate. One in three African-American girls will have a baby before she is 20. The jobless rate for minority 16 to 19-year-olds is over 56%. From the newspaper Minneapolis, Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, August 19, 2004. 15 to 20% of American juvenile offenders are tried as adults. I have a friend, Phil, who realized how hopeless the job market was for ex-cons. He recognized that highly trained personnel are employed to weed out possible bad hires. Most of the ex-cons I know work for under $10 an hour. Phil created a company designed to provide meaningful work for those who needed it most. His formula of building a food manufacturing facility with a crew of 50% ex-cons worked pretty well. I saw real pride in men who had finally landed a job that made them feel like a normal, productive citizen. It was a great program and needs to be replicated on a larger scale. Most employers would rather not hire ex-cons. Phil proved that it was possible and profitable to work with convicts. It is very hard for ex-offenders to find meaningful work in America. Phil's program failed because of a food bacteria outbreak in the sandwiches he manufactured. It was a new and unpredictable problem that put him out of business. To my knowledge, there are few, if any, business programs that pay the wages and esteem-building dividends that Phil's business paid. Not many years ago, America lambasted China for its civil rights abuses of working convicts for 10 cents an hour. Today, a convict in China makes about 12 cents an hour compared to 11 cents an hour paid to a Minnesota convict. About 50% of the prison population is African American, while African Americans make up under 13% of the general population. Some in my community still think that the Negro is still languishing in the corners of American society and finds himself an exile in his own land, an appalling condition. From Martin Luther King's speech, "I Have a Dream." Too much truth still exists in Dr. King's observation 40 years after he made it. To accept that states predict the need for prison space by counting the number of children in child protection indicates the impersonal standards that define America and differentiate us from the rest of the industrialized world. Angela Davis writes about the tragic stories of abused children turned criminals and their lifelong struggle with crime, violence, and mental illness. This place welcomes a man who is full of rage and violence. Here, he is not abnormal or perceived as different. Here, rage is nothing new, and for men scarred by child abuse and violent lives, the prison is an extension of inner life. From Angela Davis's book, Race, Gender, and Prison History, Temple University Press, 2001. A 2001 Human Rights Watch report on prison rape touched on the subject of sexual slavery. Is commonplace in the system's most dangerous prison units. Hundreds of reports have been written on the humiliating circumstances within this nation's crowded and underfunded prisons. There is a growing trend for violence and sexuality and abuse in American prisons. Our prisons have become notorious for allowing prisoner abuse, so much so that we no longer term prisoner rape abuse as a crime. There is very little public concern for humane prison conditions or rehabilitation programs for criminals. Every third home under construction in America is behind bars. From the book Ghosts from the Nursery by Robin Carr Morse, Atlantic Monthly Press, 1997. In 2004, 1 in 37 Americans will spend time in jail, up from 1 in 53 in 1974. Quote, "The world's trade in illegal drugs is estimated to be worth around $400 billion, about the same as the world's legal pharmaceutical industry. In 2003, the federal government will spend almost $20 billion on its national drug control strategy, and the state and local governments will spend another $20 billion." End quote. National Drug Control Strategy Budget Summary 2003 and February 2002. Department of Labor statistics show recent jobless rates for African-American men in Detroit, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Houston, and New York City at about 50%. This is about identical to the rate of formerly incarcerated African-American men, 60%, in those cities. Politicians have shifted the blame for social problems away from inequality, racism, and injustice, and placed it on the immoral acts of bad people. Statistically, it's apparent that we have made people of color the bad people. It's a great deal simpler to judgmentally mete out punishment than to address social failures. Too many Americans would rather put their energy into blaming and hating than caring and fixing. Most of the industrialized world long ago came to understand that public safety is better served by a civilized approach to crime. Most crime is the result of impoverishment and mental health problems, resulting from an abusive childhood that can be impacted by early intervention, therapy, and education. In the U.S., drug use has remained fairly constant these past 10 years, even though spending on enforcement has doubled during that time. Prison spending grew 5 times as fast as spending for higher education, according to a recent report examining prison growth in 17 states. Dollar for dollar, state and local spending on corrections increased more than twice as much as spending on education or health between 1977 and 2001. From the Justice Policy Institute. With the possibility that 10% of America's population will soon be institutionalized, leading the industrialized world in crime and violence, do we owe it to ourselves to reconsider how our current social policies are serving us? 1 out of 3 black men are currently in the criminal justice system. 600,000 felons are released from our prisons annually. In America, millions of unrehabilitated ex-convicts will cost our counties and states billions of dollars in crime, therapy, reinstitutionalization, and the very real cost of lost production. 1 in 17 of all African-American men are current or former prisoners, compared with 1 in 38 white men. African-American men make up over 42% of the men arrested for violent crime and serve longer sentences in general than white men. 46 American states have laws that take away voting rights of anyone serving time for a felony. 10 states take voting rights away permanently. Almost 1.5 million African-American men cannot vote because of a felony. Almost 15% of the African-American male population. In Alabama and Florida, 31% of black men are permanently barred from voting. From the Human Rights Watch, Losing the Vote, The Sentencing Project, 1998. The Sentencing Project Group reports that 70% of those sentenced to state prisons were convicted of nonviolent crimes. Drug offenders were 57% of federal prison inmates in 1999. Drunk drivers kill over 20,000 Americans per year. Almost all drunken driving offenses are dealt with as misdemeanors, punished by fines and loss of driving privileges. Most drunken drivers are white. Very few prison sentences are given to drunken drivers who don't kill someone. In comparison, typical penalties for crack cocaine possession are commonly 5 years for a first offense. With mandatory minimums, 15 to 20 years for a first-time offender is not uncommon. Crack cocaine is a poor person's drug. Crack draws a sentence many times that of powder cocaine. Weldon Angelos, a 25-year-old producer of rap records, was sentenced for a mandatory minimum sentence of 55 years for selling several $100 in marijuana on each of 3 occasions and carrying a gun while selling the drugs. It is his first offense. Other sentencing guidelines: terrorist bombing intending to kill a bystander, 20 years. Second-degree murder, 14 years. Kidnapping, 13 years. Rape of a 10-year-old, 11 years. From the New York Times article, Long-Term in Drug Case Fuels Debate on Sentencing, September 2004. A federal appeals court ruled 6-5 that Arkansas can force a prisoner on death row to take antipsychotic medication to make him sane enough to be executed. From the New York Times, February 2, 2003. The Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles decided James Bowden, with an IQ of 65, 12-year-old equivalent, was competent to be executed in 1986. In 1980, America had no private prisons. In 1995, we had 104. Never before had it been possible in this country to become rich by incarcerating other people, but now it is commonplace. The prison industry is a multi-billion-dollar business with lobbyists and big-time financial backers. The ex-convict lobby is the same as it was in 1866. There is no ex-convict lobby. In Minnesota, the average prison term went from 33.9 months in 2001 to 45.75 months in September 2004. In an interview with Minneapolis City Pages, November 17, 2004, Dakota County Sheriff Don Goodmanson claims that prisoners are getting longer sentences when they are way past their prime. He states, they're no longer a threat to society. They're becoming geriatric wards. He also believes that the mentally ill do not have a place in America. The number of people in jail on psychotropic drugs is huge. From my own study, I would agree. It appears that the number of mentally ill people in prison is statistically similar to the number of mentally ill children and juveniles in the juvenile justice system, 50 to 75%. The poor and the black have been the chief victims of the death penalty. Clarence Darrow observed that, from the beginning, a procession of the poor, the weak, the unfit have gone through our jails and prisons to their deaths. They have been the victims. From Ramsey Clark, Crime in America, published by Simon & Schuster, 1970. Texas has over 450 men and women on death row, and America executed 317 people from 1998 to 2001. From the author John Bessler, the book Kiss of Death, Boston Northeastern University Press, 2003. The annual estimated cost of crime in the U.S. is between $1.1 trillion and $1.6 trillion. These figures are calculated using insurance figures, prison and judicial system figures, and for various crimes based on some real and some estimated valuations. The real average cost of a gunshot wound, $16,500. The estimated average rape or assault valuation, $70,000 to $90,500. The estimated average value of death, $1 to $3 million. Most of us would pay more than these figures to not have our children, friends, or other family members raped and murdered. The cost of crime in this country is much higher than the current estimates would have us believe. Think about it. The methods used in this calculation do not include the fear that follows a violent crime or the mourning for a lost spouse or child. I know parents whom wasted away and died early after the violent death of their only child, who I went to grade school with. I also have two acquaintances whose daughters were raped and murdered. I went to school with one of those victims. Add the cost of crime, incarceration, court systems, and painful human losses and tragedies to the very real cost of wasted lives that often stretch a person's full lifespan, and it can run into the many millions of dollars per child. Try to understand the simple differences between a person who leads a relatively benign life, who gets a job, has a family, and becomes a productive member of his or her community, and a child who is made emotionally and mentally unstable through years of living in a toxic environment and will inevitably fail at education, fail at personal relationships, and fail at getting along in the normal community. Quote, "We have got to stop building prisons and start building our children." End quote. Colin Powell, National Governors Conference, Summer of 2000. Because the problems with violence and criminal behaviors are poverty-related and much more prevalent in the poorer African-American community, suburban voters tend to ignore the problem. White flight over the last 40 years has left many of our cities with crumbling neighborhoods without a tax base to provide adequate services to their citizens. Alabama has reinstituted chain gangs and actually trucks in rocks for them to smash. It has recently returned to a policy of shackling its women prisoners during childbirth. Many states allow drugs and rape in their prison systems. The violence committed within prison walls soon finds its way out onto the streets of our cities. Almost all crime in America is a result of the high rate of recidivism and our own unique child abuse prison feeder system. Recidivism in American prisons is consistently about 66%. According to Minnesota Supreme Court Justice Kathleen Blatz, over 90% of the juvenile justice population have come out of the child protection system. Over 90% of the criminal justice population have come out of the juvenile justice system. Percentage increase between 1986 and 1991 in the number of women in state prisons, 75%, result of the new kingpin laws. 55% of women in state prisons were convicted of drug offenses. 67% of women prisoners in 1991 had children under 18. 35% of state prison inmates had an immediate family member preceding him or her in prison. 25% of women in federal prison in 1990 were either pregnant or had just given birth. 50% of men imprisoned in 1981 held jobs before prison. 19% of the same group held jobs after prison. 1,899 Americans died in 1970 from legal and illegal drugs. 29,866 Americans died from cirrhosis of the liver in 1969. From Dan Baum's book, Smoke and Mirrors, Little Brown Press, 1996. My accountant tells the story of the businessman who had $90,000 embezzled by an employee. When he called the suburban police, they told him that there was nothing that he or they could do about it. The next morning, he called the chief of police and explained the situation this way. Quote, "Had I called you from my retail convenience store and some young man of color had stolen a candy bar from me, you would have sent out a squad and had the perpetrator arrested." Unquote. When he then asked the chief if this was how the law worked, the police arrested the woman. America builds prisons with gusto. Politically, rehabilitation has become a non-issue. The public and our elected officials have chosen to eradicate rights, amenities, pride, and hope from people who find themselves in legal trouble. Our culture has little forgiveness for ex-cons. Jobs are hard to find and many felons have lost their right to vote. Fitting in is not easy if you don't have meaningful work. Unable to find meaningful work, untreated mental health issues, and a sense of hopelessness combine to hinder a smooth return to society. Americans have come to accept a recidivism rate of 66% as normal. Call to action. Study the issues and form your own opinions. Social policy for nonviolent offenses combined with inadequate child protection policies have filled our prisons and made life more dangerous for all Americans. Visit www.famm.org. Families Against Mandatory Minimums. Investigate Families Against Mandatory Minimums. Attend a meeting or start a chapter in your community. Support reasonable laws on crime. If you're really courageous, meet an ex-offender and find out what it's like firsthand to reenter society after being incarcerated.